So Casey, what got you interested in this story in the first place?
Sure. So first of all, I was like a lot of, you know, young bookish girls, totally obsessed with Scout as a kid and loved To Kill a Mockingbird, and knew that Macomb, the town in the novel, bore some resemblance to Monroeville, where Harper Lee had been born and raised. And so I had always wanted to go and see Monroeville. And in 2015, when Ghost at a Watchman was announced, I went down to do some reporting for The New Yorker on that, you know, kind of shocking announcement about her second novel. And it was motivated by this interest I'd always had in her work and the opportunity to go see where she was born and raised. And it was while I was down there that I learned of this work on the Reverend and of her interest in true crime more generally. And it turned out, you know, from Tom Radney's family to some of the journalists who had covered the original case for various local papers to, you know, sheriffs and court reporters and the proliferation of people who had been involved in the Maxwell case who were still alive and able to narrate the events and help me with research, it just seemed like there was more and more material, possibly enough for a book.
So as you're researching this book, you're basically conducting two separate investigations, you know, one into the Willie Maxwell case and another into Harper Lee's life. Can you talk about how that process kind of played out?
Sure. I mean, in some ways, there's a lot of overlap between the two because, of course, you know, you'd be interviewing someone about the Maxwell case, and it turned out Harper Lee had interviewed them, too. Or, you know, you'd find a piece of correspondence where she mentions the Maxwell case, and that would lead you to that person who might have more material knowledge of the original story. So they were overlapping, but the ways in which they diverged, I also needed to learn something about her as a writer and about what drew her to this case and ultimately about what happened to her in the years after To Kill a Mockingbird. And that was another process of figuring out, you know, people who knew her well, the kind of, you know, inner circle of people who were around and in whom she was confiding the actualities of her life. So obviously she's a writer where there's this tremendous public interest in her life, but far from being reclusive, she was just private.
Yeah, and I'd like you to talk more about that, because I think that's one of the main things that people might be surprised about when they read this book and get your picture of Harper Lee. You talk about how the public perception of Harper Lee matches up with the person that you discovered in your research.
I think in a lot of ways, Harper Lee is someone who's, you know, the public interest in her life is just so incongruous with her own interest in the press or publicity. So for all of the appetite the world had, you know, all the people who loved Mockingbird and wanted to know more about the woman who'd written it, she was really allergic to that kind of interest. And she had these very conservative ideas about how the life of the writer didn't matter to the text at hand. And, you know, this very old school way of thinking what matters is the work and not the person who made it. And unfortunately, you know, she held those beliefs at a time when there was an increasing kind of celebrity interest in authors. And I think we all know about this now, whether it's, you know, an interview with Oprah or social media, we just expect to know the interior and private life of people who we admire. And I think that was very frustrating for Harper Lee, and she chafed at it. And she, you know, she was not reclusive in the sense that she didn't go and do things in the world. In fact, I think one of the most exciting things about the book, and for me as a journalist, was getting to know just how busy and cosmopolitan a life she had. You know, she was going to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. She was going to the Frick Museum. You know, she ate at restaurants up and down the island of Manhattan. She was going to baseball games. You know, she had this busy, full life with friends and family, but she didn't like the press. And, you know, in the face of not getting access, we started to develop these myths to explain why that was, and there wasn't room for her to just be a private person. So a lot of the book, I think, will be satisfying to people who just want to know more about her mind and what she was reading and how she thought and, you know, what occupied her writerly interest in the years after Mockingbird. Because, of course, the Maxwell case is an independently interesting story, but her interest corresponds to a lifelong interest in true crime and legal mysteries and, you know, detective stories of a certain sort. And I think that will be rewarding for folks to kind of put together the life of her mind with the kind of public silence that they grew accustomed to.
So one other thing I wanted to talk about is, for me, when I was reading the book, one thing that really stood out and impressed me was this sense, really strong sense of place and setting and how authentic it felt. And It surprised me because for you, you know, you're not coming
an
in
interloper.
As, well, not necessarily like super interloper. You're from Maryland, but definitely not a deep South native. So was that a concern for you as far as developing this sense of like authenticity when you tell this story? And was that a concern for you when you were conducting these interviews?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a great question, Alex, and I appreciate how carefully you read the book and how generously you did. But I love regionalism. And, you know, again, part of what drew me to this is just the love of Harper Lee's writing. And, you know, I cut my teeth on Faulkner and Welty and, you know, McCullers. And so I always wanted to give a sense. And in fact, the first time I saw Alex City and Lake Martin, you know, I just think these are parts of Alabama that are so beautiful and people outside the state, including me, don't know about. You know, maybe we know the industrial cities and, you know, we've seen, you know, pictures of Birmingham or Montgomery, but we don't know this natural wonder of the place. And so that landscape and that rich natural world and the kind of texture of small town life, it felt essential to me in writing this book. And it was not only needed to kind of give a sense of that original story, but again, it's essential to understanding Harper Lee as a writer because it's the world that formed her and it's the social dynamics she tried to represent in her work. So I knew it was important, and to that end, you know, you just, you know, you keep your eyes as wide as you can, and you look around at the world, and you read as much as you can. I'm very grateful to Harvey Jackson, Wayne Flint. You know, there are great historians of Alabama who look at the landscape and the people, and they help you make sense of it, even if you haven't spent much time here, much less, you know, been born and raised here. Or in the case of a lot of people I interviewed for the book, you know, you're going back 7 or 8 generations. And that is a deep knowledge of place that you could never simulate, but you could try to, you know, pay homage to and listen to the way that they talk about the Tallapoosa River or the Alabama River and try and bring some of that into the book. So I hope it works.
Thank you so much for being so generous with your time, and thank you for
the
book.
Oh, my gosh, absolutely. You have to know that, you know, the times I've been down here reporting, you guys are on the radio a lot of the time. If I've not got my iPhone on with, you know, country music, I've got you guys on the radio, so it's totally rad on this stage to be talking to you.
Right. Well, thank you for listening.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks so much.